teacher. Okay. It's my great pleasure to give the talk. Well, the whole morning we are discussing about all these asymmetric features in the solar neighborhood. And I already noticed that the theorists have a lot of debates only with the small part of data in the solar neighborhood. So I'm going to mess up everything and move out to get much more data to challenge the theories, hopefully. Okay, well, thanks to Larry and Jose has already give all this introduction and background. So I'm just quickly remind you that the corrugation stuff has been found in the last few years and turned out to be very interesting in all the things about the disk. And also the bulk motions. In the beginning, I think this is probably the first one from the RIV data finding these asymmetric radial velocities in the XY plane. And also in the new Gaia data, we see basically the same thing. This is the flip art plot. And Jeff Carlin using the Lamont data shows, well, confirm this one and also go to a little bit upper and down. And this one is just some compiling work with Martin Lopez Corredora recently confirming the negative radial velocity in the solar neighborhood and another negative velocity at around 15 kiloparsec. And if you look at RZ plane, the velocity looks even more crazy. This is the Lamont data done by Haifeng Wang, and this is the Gaia data. So basically, they show quite similar result. This is the pre-Gaia data, I should point it out. And also, we've been talking a lot about this phase space spiral discovered from Gaia, and this work is done a few months after this one, and we just give the time stamp for the stars and looking at the spiral at different populations. And you can see that in the immediate age populations, we can clearly see these spirals. And also the next talk will give by Zhao Yu Li will also go back to this point that the old population may not show a clear spiral. Well, as I said, all these interesting features are mostly focusing on the solar neighborhood. This is only one single point of the whole disk. So ideally, if we know everything about the whole disk, well, life will be much easier. But if we cannot go to the whole disk, at least we can go to a larger volume. That is the point that the Lamont survey can play some role. I do not want to go to details about this telescope and the survey. I just want to point out that we have already collect more than 10 million stellar spectres onto last year. So this is a footprint. Basically, we sample quite well in the North Hemisphere. Okay, so since we have a lot of data and in the galactic anti-center, actually the Lamont data can go much deeper than the apogee data because interstellar extinction is not really the matter. So we can go very far to look at all these things and to revisit the ripples in star cones and also in the bulk motion. Before we do that, we have to map the three-dimensional density profile of the disk with about 70,000 Lamont RGB stars. And you can see that we can well touch to beyond 20 kiloparsec from the galactic center. Back to Xu Yan et al. 2015, that work claimed that the disk should be larger than we have ever known. And this work, we can quantitatively measure the density profile up to 20 kiloparsec. And we can do this three component decomposition of the star count to get a radial density profile of the disk. It is show that first thing you can see that the composed radial density profile show two break. One is at 11 kiloparsec and another is at 15 kiloparsec. And the second thing you can see that the red one is a thin disk. The thin disk is actually has a smaller scale length than the thick disk. And also the first break is mostly contributed by the thin disk. The thin disk go down after 11 kiloparsec and basically disappear if you go to beyond 14 kiloparsec.
This is by geometric definition?
Yeah, this is by geometric definitions. So this one is derived by slicing the data into R, and then we just simply feed the density profile in Z direction. So this is basically a non-parametric method giving some space for the flaring. So we can see the flaring. I'll mention it later. And since we have a perfect multi-component star count model, we can subtract that model from the observed data and look at the residual of the density in RZ plane. And you can see that we find quite rich substructures in this map. The red one are the over density and the blue one are dips. And if we just zoom in to this small region close to the sign, there are more details you can dig out. And this part are basically same as what Larry found in the SDSS data. And if you go from the sign to the outside, you can see that the density at around the solar neighborhood is more, well, the stars are more in the south than the north. And if you go to the 10 kiloparsec, the north go increasing the number of stars, and then the south looks like a lack of stars. And if you go to like 15 kiloparsec, it's turned around. The north contains less stars than the south. So, and also you can see that the vertical distance of all these substructures get larger and larger if you go from the solar neighborhood to the outer disk. So basically what we see is actually the oscillation of the midplane of the disk. And another interesting point is that it is supposed that we should detect the Manassas ring at this point, but actually we didn't find any statistical significant signature representing the Manassas ring in our data. I'll go back to the Manassas ring in the next slides. So basically, these features and these features are corresponding to the Xu et al., the north near and south middle structure. This is a star count. We can see the star count is really show a lot of ripples. And let's see the kinematics. And this is, the well-known Gaia data, but you may notice that the volume is like 2 kiloparsec around the sign. And we can have more using the LAMOST, very young OB-type stars, showing a similar feature in the solar neighborhood. And in this paper, the authors thought that these velocity, asymmetric velocities could be related to the spirals, the local arm or the Perseus arm. But if in this larger volume using the OB type stars, which should follow quite tightly with the spiral arms, we didn't see any correlation between these ripple-like velocities and the gas-defined spiral arms. So the question is, what is the reason that the young stars show such large-scale ripples, which is not related to spiral arms? We keep that question open, and then we go forward to look at the velocity map in RZ direction. This is again from the Gaia DR2. And with these RGB stars from LAMOST, we can go to 20 kiloparsec and find that V5 shows such a complicated feature in the outer disk.
Sorry, this is beautiful. Chemistry, you don't
have, do you separate the alpha? No. We have the alpha abundance, but in this work, we didn't use alpha abundance. But mostly, they should be alpha poor stars. And also, the other two velocity components, VR and V5, shows quite chaotic substructures. Well, in principle, we can recognize a few branches from this V5 map and also some ridge-like features shown here. And also, you can see this increasing thickening of this disk, which is actually the feature of flare. In VZ, we expect that we can detect the warp, meaning that the stars are averagely go up in the galactic anticenter, which is supposed to be the kinematic feature of the warp. But in fact, what we see is just kind of messy thing. The stars moving up only below the midplane, but if you go to go up to the midplane, you can find the negative vertical velocity, meaning that at this region, the disk is in a breathing mode. Okay, and this is what we know from the observed data about the bulk motion. And then we move to the interesting phase spirals. Jules has shown this one. It's quite a clear schematic view showing that the distribution in the ZVZ plane in the inner disk is like this one. The disk is thin and the velocity dispersion is large. If you go outside, the disk gets thicker because the perturbation, and also the velocity dispersion goes down. And this is the spirals can wind up in the inner part, and the outer part, basically they don't have enough time to wind up. And this is what we see from the observed data, the real data. So this is a 6 kiloparsec. It is not very clear, but 7 kiloparsec, you barely see a little bit of spiral here. And 8 kiloparsec, you can see a quite well wound spiral. 9 kiloparsec, 10, 11, it gets looser. And at 12 kiloparsec, it looser more. And I think beyond 12 kiloparsec, this is for the first time we detect the spiral at 13, 14, and 15 kiloparsec. Beyond 15 kiloparsec, basically, we cannot see the spiral feature anymore. There's nothing there. So what we find is that the spiral patterns only show between 7 to 15 kiloparsec, and the spiral tightly wind in the inner disk, but loosely wind in the outer disk. And then it disappears beyond like 17 kiloparsec. Then we do a very interesting exercise to tell up all these spirals together along the R. And then we turn rotate the picture, let this axis is the Z axis. And then you can see the red one are the fast rotating, larger V5 stars. And they show they align quite well with Z equals to zero. And then it gets branched at this point, and this point. This is exactly what we see in the RZ plane. So this, I think, completely agree with Larry that what we see is basically the different projection of the distribution function. So the spiral actually contribute to all these features we see in the bulk motions. Okay, and let's look at the Monassus ring. In this plot, I've already mentioned that we didn't find the overdensity in the location of monoceres. We can explain this by using a flare disk to model the density map. If we use a flare disk, and if we do not take into account the flare, we would expect that if the radial density profile along the black line and the red line should have the same slope. But if we take into account the flare, they don't agree with each other. The black one in the real data looks like this one. So if we think this is a slope of the radial density profile and look at the red one shows a shallower slope, and then compared with the black one, you will detect overdensity here. We believe that this is how the overdensity of the Monassus ring came from. So basically, this is simply the flare disk feature we find in the outer disk. But if we check out the velocities of the Monassus ring, it shows quite interesting streaming feature. The V5 here is a little bit slower, and you can clearly see a negative VR in this region, in the Monassus region, and also the negative VZ in the Monassus region. It looks like something like a stream at this point. It is quite confused us for a while. And also the flare disk, I can say more about this flare disk. This V5 already shows this flare, and we can clearly see this flaring in the star count map. So the blue one is inner disk and the red one is outer disk. Well, you may not see clearly the dots. The black dots are the real data, and these colorful lines are from the model. So basically the model shows that if you go to the outer disk, it gets thicker and thicker. And then we can measure the scale heights. The scale heights show increasing trend with R. This is for the thin disk and this is for the thick disk. And these two points, we cannot see the thin disk anymore. So we just feed the data with only one disk component. So basically the disk, the flare showing in this scale height go this way. And the geometric thick disk in the outer part quite consistent with this part. I think these are basically the alpha high thick disk in about 10 kiloparsec. But if you go here, it's just the flare disk. But geometrically, they connect with each other quite well. We cannot see any sudden change at this point. Okay, until now, I show you quite complicated realities. The ripples in the star count basically confirm Xu et al. In 2015. And we also see the very young stars showing these ripple-like features, which is quite confusing. And the spirals has been found in a large range of radius. And also, we see the flare very clearly, and also the Monassus ring showing the streaming velocities. We need to do some exercise to well understand all these pictures. We can probably interpret anything, each one by different theory, but I think in principle, it would be even better we can explain all this one with one mechanism. This is what we do with a test particle simulation. I show you here a small movie with about 1 million particles in this test particle simulation. So this is just quantitatively shows that a dwarf galaxy hit in this one, in this at this point. Actually, we don't put a real dwarf galaxy here. We just put one big particle with 2 times 10 to 10 solar mass and let this particle to hit the disk at this point. Basically, here you can see this V5 be affected by the heating, and then it's rotating. At some point, you will find the spiral come first from the inner disk and then go to the outer disk. Let's see it again. The spiral come here first and quickly go outside. And also, if you look at this RZ map, you can see this V5. Well, when the heat happens, it gets thicker and the flare comes out, and also all these substructures in velocity map. So let's see some at about 0.3 gigayear after the heating, we can check out all these maps. We find if we just look at this direction, the VR shows a ripple quite similar like what we see in the OB stars. But why OB stars? This is 300 million year, and the OB stars have the age at least like 30 million year, maybe younger. One explanation is that the perturbation is not work for the disk, for the stellar disk, but also for the gaseous disk. And the gaseous disk can keep these kinematic feature for a while, and then the newborn star from the gas clouds can inherit these kinematic features and then show up in these young OB type stars. And also, if we look at this Z0, which is the midplane of the disk, it gets perturbed, and then they show this up and down oscillation. The red is go up and the blue is go down. Green is in the center part. And this is actually the reason why we see the substructures like this one. The red in the south, then in the north, and then in the south. So this is the stellar density oscillation is related to this mid-plane resolution oscillation. And looking at this RZ map, well, we can recognize some kind of flare here, which is quite similar to this what we see in this V5 map in RZ plane. I should point out that this one is not a global feature. It is not like the whole disk get flared. It is just a local part of the disk get flared. This is quite, I think Larry has already pointed out that this is just the early stage of the heating, not already heated, not a phase mixed. And also you can see, oops. Sorry. I should go to, yeah. Also, if you look at this feature, it's quite like this ridge feature in this point. This is actually, as I said, this is a projection of the spirals. And then we can find some point, for example, this one, you can see the low, well, azimuthal velocities and quite asymmetric negative radial velocities, and at this point is positive VZ. So all these are qualitatively similar to the Monassus ring showing this velocity streaming. So we think that the velocity streaming in the Monassus ring could be only a snapshot of this perturbation. It is not a stable feature like real tidal structure. Okay, so compare the simulated spiral with observed data. There is an interesting point that we can constrain the perturbation time scale by looking at the spiral, firstly, the smallest radius that the spiral show up, and the largest radius the spiral show up. So basically, we see the spiral at around from 7 kiloparsec to 15 kiloparsec, and we can simply look at this orbital period. At about 7 kiloparsec, the orbital period is around 200 million years, maybe a little bit longer. And at 15 kiloparsec, it's about 500 million years. So if we can see simultaneously the spiral at this point and at this point, it means that we have already know the lower limit and the upper limit of the time of bombardment. So we can give a constraint about the time is from 200 to 500 million years. Okay, let's go to the summary. We have quite a lot of complicated asymmetric features come from the observations, and the waves or corrugations show in the star count are quite similar, like all the simulations. I didn't mention a lot of theoretical work because of time is limited, like Dungia 2016 and Chauvin's recent work, all show similar corrugations. Spiral arm may also raise something, but the initial condition is quite extreme. And the velocity ripple thing can only cannot be explained by spiral arm because they do not align with the spiral arm. And we try to explain it with a bar, but we need quite a large pattern speed to moving the outer Lindblad resonance at this point, and only can explain this point. We cannot explain the second negative velocity with bar. But the dwarf galaxy heating can explain this quite well. And the branches of these bulk motions are actually the mapping, the projection in different angle for these phase-space spirals. The phase-space spiral can be generated by a buckling of the bar, but only in the solar neighborhood. If you look at a large range of radius and also the different winding up at different radius, we believe that this could only be produced by a dwarf galaxy perturbation. And the monocyte ring and flare disk give us a quite similar image like the simulations. So in summary, we believe that all these, well, at least most of these large-scale asymmetric features we find from the galactic outer disk are probably very likely because of this heating of a dwarf galaxy not far ago, maybe from 200 to 500 million years ago. Okay, I stop here. Thanks.
Okay, lovely talk, Chow. So we have time for some questions. Ah, click off the mark.
Thank you. So I had a couple of questions. Did you have a sort of polar orbit for this dwarf galaxy? Is that right?
No. Well, for the simulation, you mean?
Yes.
Oh, we just simply let it vertically pass through the disk. This is not a real galaxy. We just make this exercise to see how the effect it can make in different projections in distribution function.
Yes. And my second question was that, you know, several years ago, Michael Feast and company observed type 1 Cepheids along the flare of the galactic disk.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering how those observations compare with yours.
I think it's still possible because, well, I have already, this is probably a little bit small. So you can see that if we just look at this direction, the flare is not only in this direction. You can still find this in the opposite side of the galaxy. So the flare probably not that well mixed but it does not mean it's only one point that we can find it.
I think Joss was next.
Yeah. Sure. Very well done to Lemos team. Later in our paper, we talked about that the outer corrugations and warps and so forth should be probed with the H1, and our models show H1 phase spiral structures in the kinematics, and there's no reason, and H1 corrugations were where they first were claimed a long time ago.
That's right.
So we thought that would be the first evidence for the outer disk corrugation, but to have come from it so quickly with Lemost is excellent. Well done. And just one very subtle issue, the outer corrugation wants to warp, and you go far enough out, and as Shervin was saying, and we also see, Shervin used the language feathering, which I think is nice. You can actually bifurcate and break depending on the nature of the orbit, and you can actually, this is rather than the tangent point of a warp, it can actually be a feature that's lifted off the plane, like a feather, as Shervin calls it. Yeah. So just, it would be nice to structurally know whether it is a tangent point to a corrugation or a feather structure. They are different sorts of orbit impacts. So if that was ever possible in the future, that would be nice to know. But it's a subtle point, small issue.
Yeah. Okay, I think Shervin was next.
Hi, a very nice talk. It's great to see that you've confirmed a couple of things that we've actually shown as well that I presented on Monday. I think for the thing about the fact that you don't see the phase space spiral in age, like for the older ages, that's actually due to a binning issue that Tian had. In fact, you know, if you go and have a look, like, you know, we did the same exercise with ages using the ages from Jason and Payel, and you can actually see it. And in fact, what's also sometimes important to do, because I think, you know, you're saying that you're not seeing anything, you know, further out, but I think you're probably also affected by selection effects, and that does actually
Along the radius.
So when you're basically tracking the phase space spiral as a function of radius,
yes.
I thought that was really neat. This is really neat, but I think one needs to be also be careful with the way that basically you're selecting stars as well, that you basically complete like above and below, because when you view things in V5, you can also like add, you can basically smear out information because you're not really sampling very well the phase space. And it would be interesting if you tried to do this, for example, in overdensity, like the maps that I've shown you.
In which sense you say selection, kinematic selection?
Sometimes you can have kinematic selection and also just spatial selection as well, which will kind of, you know, make your phase space spiral look actually quite weird.
Well, we can check it out. But basically the Lemost survey doesn't induce any kinematic selection. I think probably the Gaia promotion can give something, but we can check it out.
Okay, I think Ralph was next.
Sorry for asking that question, but what have you done to check your distances? Because so there's a few features that are making me nervous usually, which is when you see streaks pointing to the sun, it's very frequently a shadow when you overestimate distances to more nearby structures. And so have you checked the systematics, errors, etc.? And
yes, we did.
The second point is Monoceros.
Yep.
I think to remember that it was found that it has a much larger V5 than you suppose.
Much larger, the distance you mean?
No, a larger azimuthal speed.
Yes, but it can be smaller and larger.
It probably more significantly above those values.
Could check that. Yeah. Because it's compressed in RZ, we don't know where in the azimuthal angle the measurement actually is. But you know, if you look azimuthally, there is a variation, or with L or with azimuthal phi, right? So I don't know where the measurement is actually.
Well, you mean the azimuth angle?
Yeah, where you measured.
We didn't have much azimuth angle. Basically.
But is it directly the anticenter? Is it where
more or less?
At? Okay.
I think the extension in azimuth angle is around 20 degrees or even less.
Okay.
Xiao Yu.
So I have two questions. The first is you mentioned the absence of the snow shell outside 17 kpc. Are there any like small number statistic effects in this?
Are there any
small number statistic effects in this?
No.
In this absence?
this is like quite a few hundred stars at 70 kiloparsec. So each radius beam here is like, here is like thousands stars, and here is still quite a few hundred stars. We actually can go to like 25 kiloparsec, but with only a dozen of stars. We just cut it out, doesn't do anything with that.
Okay, the second question is about the test particle simulation. You allow the perturber to pass through the disk once, and you have a quite nice agreement with observation, but we know it actually did...
We did twice. Actually, it can go back about 1 giga-year later. Basically, this can make the whole picture more complicated, but we just want to confirm that heating by a dwarf galaxy can raise all these features, and we cannot do, well, this morning we have already talked about this self-gravity thing, so we don't think the test particle can well reproduce all the observational result. We just want to better understand what happens.
Other questions? I have a quick one maybe. You do this fit of this flared disk, and the scale height for the thick disk that you showed that you get as a function of radius has this wobble in it.
That's a good question. You mean this one, right?
Yes.
Yes. We check it out in this paper. This is a real feature. It is not because or bad fitting thing. In this paper, we didn't... It is about 10 kiloparsec. You can see this S shape here. The sun is around here, so it is not kind of selection effect. It's just because the density profile twist at some point and then make this thing. We didn't discuss about the reason why this come from in this paper, but afterward we noticed that in Dongya 2016, she make a heating of a dwarf galaxy on a disk, and then she find the thickness of the disk also shows oscillation. So probably it's related to this one, but I'm not sure because we also see this in thick disk and also in a thin disk.
So it's not related to some sort of azimuthal averaging?
That's a good point. I think I'm not sure, but we can, I think we did a test to cut the data in different azimuth angle, but basically we find very similar result. Okay. But as I said, azimuth angle is quite narrow for our data.
Ralph, there's no one else who wants to chip in who hasn't spoken yet.
Okay, so first one, your values are very much shorter than the ones of SDSS and most other samples. So first one, why is that? The second one is unrelated. You said there is a breathing mode far in the outer disk. Mm-hmm. Has it been checked by models if that is possible at all within a Hubble time? Because the breathing in the outer disk would take a long time.
Well, it's not like, the first question is about the number of scale height. I think there are quite a few things. First of all, it is not dramatically different with Urich et al. 2008 for the thin disk. They give 300 and we have around 2050, something like that.
But it's several sigma.
It depends on the stellar population you select. And this one are mostly the giant stars. And we know that the giant stars are, well, more or less young, not that young, but quite metal-rich one. And the second thing is that the scale height in this part, the sampling of this data is quite well covered the very low galactic latitude, which is not the case for the SDSS. And the second question is about this breeze mode. We just detect the velocity, and it does not mean that the stars go through the disk. It's just the trend.
Just as a quick point of clarification, all these studies we're talking about are using the same definition of HZ, right?
Yes.
So it's an exponential
scale. It's a, well, it's a source, well, it's a...
Sex squared.
Sex
squared scale.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
There might be some differences there.
Yeah. No, no, mostly they are same.
Okay. There'll be a correction factor if you're using sex squared versus exponential versus.
Yeah.
So that might explain some of the difference that Ralph is worried about. Yeah. I think we have time for one more quick question from Shervin.
The factor of two already in that. So the form has already taken into account the factor of two.
Just to let you know, actually, our simulations are actually available. So if you want, like, I'll give you the snapshots.
Good to know that.
Okay, I think we still have time for one more from Rosie at the front here.
So thinking back to Joss's cartoon of the thin disk flaring just beyond the sun, basically, and the thick disk dying off at around the sun as well. It would be interesting to see the relative number densities here as well as the scale heights. Can you do that?
The relative number of the the density, you mean?
Yes.
I think at sign, the thick disk contribute like around 10%. I didn't remember the exact number, but around 10%. No, no, geometry.
So you don't actually can't then connect with what we...
So when you say the thick disk local to us, that in the modern definition that I understand is based on chemistry.
Okay, because we only have the star count and we do
oh,
not...
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I mean like Gilmour-Reed...
So this is purely geometry.
Pure Gilmour-Reed counts. I apologize.
Yeah.
What if the geometry in the first place?
But we can do the exercise. We have already got the alpha abundance and metallicity for all these Kijang stars.
I think we
could do separation and look at the different chemmetric populations, what the spatial distribution looks like.
But even without saying that these are not separated chemically, you're still saying that there is a thin disk.
Yeah, sure.
At 12 kiloparsecs.
Yes. Well, even to 14 kiloparsecs.
People were saying, that the flare had already happened before that.
Yes. And you can see these, quite moderate, but...
So that's my point. I thought that other people's flaring was more substantial in the thin disk before 14 kiloparsecs.
You mean the flare or the thin disk? The fraction of the thin disk, I didn't get the...
It looks to me as though you're saying that you can still see two components in this...
Yeah.
In the star counts at 14 kiloparsecs.
Yes.
Whereas I thought that other people had said that at 14 kiloparsecs, there's really just a flared component.
Okay, I see your point. We tested by only using one disk component at 14 kiloparsec. Basically, they have quite similar fitting result. And we didn't do any, statistics to select which model is the true one. But, I think there is another...
Could you go back to your figure?
Yes.
Your early figure was beautiful.
Yeah. That is really...
Your first author, that one there.
Yeah, and if you look at the 14th kiloparsec, it is right here. So the thin disk is really contribute very few in the total star count. So, it can be discussed, but before that it's quite stable. The 14th kiloparsec, we have been struggling which how many components we should use, but finally we decide just to keep it here. But beyond 14, we only use one flare disk.
Okay. Okay, is there any other last burning questions? Because if not, I just left to thank all the speakers for this session once more time, and ciao. And let's have a quick break for coffee. We meet back here at 4 o'clock.